friends, welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring the world of live streaming and chatting with a returning guest, Christoph Trapp, who just released a new book called Going Live. Welcome back to the show, Christoph.
Hey, Amanda. Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to have you back, especially to talk about live streaming, because it is admittedly not something I've done a ton. We were just talking before this how we've been dabbling in Clubhouse and seeing if there's some crossover there, but you have really kind of mastered this. I run into you on LinkedIn going live with your podcast, and I know you're streaming in multiple other places, so you do seem like the perfect person to talk to. And just to kick it off, why don't you talk a little bit about what got you into live streaming and what you see the value of it is? Like, what are those benefits?
Yep, absolutely. So first of all, I've been live streaming for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, whenever Periscope and Meerkat came out. And I used them at that time, but it was really just one network, you know? And, you know, we held the phone up and now we're on Periscope. If we wanted to go live on Periscope and Meerkat, we would just use two phones basically. And then I started podcasting as well, maybe, I don't know, a year later or something like that. But they were very, very separate from each other. And, you know, the thing we've noticed today is that more and more brands are doing podcasts. There's now over 2 million podcasts out there. Many of them are not even active. And of course, you release an episode every week. I release an episode every week. And there's podcasts, you know, they're active if they publish in the last 90 days, which I find crazy. And you know, so there's a lot of that don't publish, just like blogs. But a lot of companies are considering it. A lot of companies are trying them. And what my advice would be is to live stream the recording. And here's the reason why. Because when you first launch your podcast, you're going to have 20 downloads, 20 listens, something like that, some crazy low number. And everybody will go, oh my goodness, is this worth it? And it doesn't feel like it, you know? I mean, I've seen that a number of times now. And the way you get around it is you really just live stream your recording, which is exactly how I brand my live streams. You know, I'm a live recording of the Business Storytelling Podcast on all my social networks that I've built over, I don't know, last 7 years, 10 years, whatever it's been. And, you know, that's an easy way to see more return on your effort out of the gate. And that's why I would do that.
So basically, since you're already recording it anyway, it's not a ton of legwork to just add on these other layers.
Well, it really isn't, especially once you get into it, it becomes easier and easier. And, you know, I'll be quite frank about it. So you and I are just recording audio, right? We're not even seeing each other. We're just sitting here. And this kind of content creation is less stressful than if we were to be on camera, you know, and we had to look at the camera. You know, I would have to fix my hair. Haha, I'm bald. But, you know, like, it's different. It is another level of stress, especially when you first start. So just to keep that in mind, but there are ways around it. Who says you have to be on camera? Just put up a logo and just, you know, shoot over the audio. It's still a video file, but why not start there? You know, don't make it too difficult. Don't think of it as like you have to be perfect. I've done, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of episodes and I'm not perfect. I push the wrong buttons. I do this wrong. I do that wrong. Like, whatever, just roll with it. Just to give you some context, if you have one person producing your show, and if you're the host, you know how many people they have on TV produce a show doing all the same things? More than one.
Yep. Good point. Puts things in perspective. So if somebody's listening to this and they've never done this before, what does that back end look like? What tools are you using to do this?
Yeah, so there's a number of different tools that you can look into. First of all, you could really just stream to one network at a time if you wanted to. Some networks allow you to do that directly, like YouTube, for example, Facebook as well from the app. But I'm a big fan of shipping it to a number of different networks at once. So the way I do it, I use Switcher Studio on my iPad to produce the show. And then I ship that to Restream, and then Restream ships it to up to 30 networks. You could also use Restream. They also have a studio. You could do that. different kind of plan, you know, if you wanted to do like pre-roll and, you know, mid-roll and whatever else on the show. So just something to consider. It also saves it. So does Switcher. And StreamYard is another tool you could use. And they help you push them to all the different networks. Now, some networks require some kind of platform like that. So LinkedIn, you can't actually just pick up your phone and go live on LinkedIn. You have to use a tool like Switcher or WeStream or StreamYard or, you know, something like that.
Have you noticed that there's more engagement on one platform over another?
Engagement is always an interesting topic because people always go after engagement and then they wonder how come we don't have 5 million comments. So one thing to keep in mind is people will just watch, right? And just listen, like in your podcast, you know, how many people send you a message after you're done? A small percentage, if any, right?
Right.
So just to keep that in mind, but it kind of depends. Like YouTube, I don't see very many comments. It's probably the least performing network for me, but I still push there because then I have it there. YouTube is also a nice way to have a backup of the video. So if for some reason something would ever happen on any of my devices, YouTube, it's pretty easy to download your video from YouTube, you know, and then grab the audio. So it's kind of, I see it a little bit as like a backup as well. LinkedIn has a good amount of comments usually often for me. I also live stream to Amazon Live, which has probably the most engagement and also the most viewership right now. And again, And that's, I think that's because it's just new and it's not as crowded and Amazon is kind of like probably prioritizing certain things, you know, so I'm riding that early wave, I think, in that on that network.
So if a company doesn't already have a show, if they don't already have a podcast, but they do kind of want to get into this space, try to engage with their audiences a little more and put content out there, how do they go about that creative process of brainstorming what makes sense for them to do live?
Well, first of all, I think it all needs to tie together. So, you know, when people come to me and they say, we need a podcast strategy or a live streaming strategy or a whatever strategy, a blog strategy, a social strategy, an email. No, you don't. You need a content strategy. And they all need to fit together, right? So if you are actively thinking about doing a podcast, consider what's your content strategy. Do you also need blog content? Do you also need email content? And tie it all together. So I'll give you an example. So at Vox Pop Media, we did an April Fool's podcast today, right? And we're recording this on April Fool's Day. And so there's an article, there's a podcast, which came from the live stream, and they all kind of go together. And that's kind of how I think about it. So back in the day, Amanda, I would interview experts and then I write about it, you know? And the live stream is really just the interview, you know, of that, what I previously used to do off air. So think about how do you tie it all together? How do you get the most bang out of it? And how do you, you know, how do you pull it off? The technology has gotten easier and easier and easier. The one thing I think I forgot to mention, so we're recording on Zoom. I'm pretty sure you can also live stream with Zoom. I've never done it before, but I've seen people do it before. So you know, if you already have like the right Zoom license, you could try that. But at the end of the day, you have to commit to it. You have to come up with what's your overarching topic. What are you going to talk about? And then I would recommend inviting guests on the show. And the guests could be internal. They could be customers. They could be prospects. They could be thought leaders. And I would have probably a mix of those people, and then commit, whether you go once a week, you know, once every other week. I probably wouldn't go less than that, honestly. Once a month is a little slow, quite frankly, but once a week is probably a good number. At Vox Pop Me, we committed to one a week. And guess what? When I was on vacation 1 week, we did two the week before.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to do this, I kind of want to like see behind the scenes, because there is a little bit more production involved, like you said, with going live. You know, we're recording right now, but we're not on camera. I do a certain level of preparation for this. What is your level of preparation when you go live? Is there anything you do in addition? Is there more strategy to that? What else do you need to do up front?
Well, the one thing I need to always think about is I want to be comfortable when I'm talking, right? So I set up my office in a way that I'm always comfortable, whether I'm standing or sitting. Right now I'm sitting, you know, whether I'm on camera or not on camera, I got the light in the right spot that doesn't bother my eyes too much. I don't have the, you know, I wear glasses, so I don't have the light in my, my lenses, for example. Mm-hmm. So all those little things, now some of them are kind of nitpicky and maybe early on it doesn't make any difference, quite frankly, but I think I find them important. There are some other technical things you need to think about. For example, when you go from you go from Restream to all the networks, let's say you use the setup I use, Switcher to Restream to Everywhere. So there's an RTMP code I have to copy and paste every time when I schedule the poll. So you got to make sure they're all tied together correctly. Then the networks have like different requirements, you know, how they want to receive video. Most of that, I would say, is automagic, honestly, in most of those platforms, in most of those systems. Every once in a while, I run into something. Amazon doesn't want this, whatever, you know, these dimensions. So you have to change them. It's not super difficult to change. But other than that, it's really the same thing. You know, have an opening, have a middle, have an end. Know what you're going to talk about, have some starter questions. I'm a big fan of starter questions, just so you can kind of have a guide to what you're going to talk about. And you can kind of think about your answers. But other than that, it's pretty much, and I'm going to clarify that a little bit, pretty much like recording an audio podcast. I'm very aware that some people need more time to get ready when they're on camera, right? Like I don't have hair. I, you know, whatever, this is how I look. Like it doesn't take me that much longer. I shave once in a while, but I get it. Some people, like, you know, when I have a female guest on my show and we're live, I'm very cognizant that I don't cancel, you know, 30 minutes before the show. And I've had people tell me, oh, this is the only reason I got, you know, dressed up today or put makeup on first time this week. So it does take more time, admittedly, to go on camera than it takes to go on audio only.
Well, I know in the pandemic era, I am definitely in that camp of I have not gotten dressed up or put makeup on nearly as much as I did before. So that makes sense. Let's talk about during the show. Presumably, if you're going live, you might be getting interactions from people who are watching sometimes. I know you said engagement, especially when you start out, is not going to be like a ton of people commenting. But how do you balance that when it does happen? If somebody says something in a comment or asks a question of a guest, how can you balance that out? Because I feel like that might get a little distracting as the host or the producer.
It can get distracting depending on who your guest is, right? So when I'm the guest on somebody's live stream and they have comments, like I'll see them and I'll just comment on the comment, you know? But I do this like, you know, every day, roughly, maybe not every day, but a couple times a week. And so there's different philosophies. Some hosts, every time somebody says anything, they flash it on screen. So Switcher and Restream, they let you kind of show them on screen while you're talking. So if somebody says hi, they just kind of flash them and then they're there. And then sometimes they say, oh, hi. Russ Brand did that on his show the other day. And he says, well, I can't say hi to everybody, but hi, everyone, you know? And I mean, if there's like 80 people saying hi, at some point you got to move on. But if somebody asks a question, put it on the screen and like answer it, you know, like I know you've actually, I think you commented on some live streams on LinkedIn. I don't remember what the question was, but you said something. So we just said, oh, Amanda Milligan, you know, host of the Cashing In on Content Marketing podcast said whatever. And, you know, then we just talked about it for a minute and then we came back to whatever else we were talking about. So when guests ask questions that are relevant, you know, flash them on the screen. Acknowledge them. And then since you also will be using it on the podcast version, I always say, oh, Amanda on LinkedIn Live, ask whatever. So I'm literally reminding the podcast listeners that we're also live on LinkedIn. So if you want to watch the live version, make sure you connect there.
That's a good point. Providing that context to people who may be listening later while you're jumping to this other topic, because there are people who can ask these questions live and they can do that for future episodes. So after the show, you had mentioned already that you use YouTube, for example, because it stores this content. Do you have a process of, okay, now I want to go back and optimize what lives on these different platforms? Or if you don't optimize them, Do you use them to see how things performed? What does that part look like?
Yeah, the looking at the performance is definitely difficult. And I know you know this as well. It's never ending debate, right? How do you get everything into one dashboard? That's still a little bit of a struggle right now, because they're all just social networks. So you have to look. But I do that. I see what performs. Not sometimes if you forget, you might catch it later when it takes off, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, how come I'm getting all these notifications? You know, that's sometimes how you catch it too. But I use YouTube really just as a backup. So typically my workflow, the way it works, is once I'm done, I save the file. So it's automatically saved in Restream. It's also saved on Switcher. And then I just export it to my computer, or if I'm already on my computer, I take the file and I push it over into Anchor. And Anchor now automatically extracts the audio. So like there's, you know, that takes like no time from my end. And then once it's done, I can go in there and I can edit it. I edit very little. You know, sometimes I edit out the beginning. Sometimes on a live stream at the beginning, there's too much chit chat. When there is, I edit that out depending what it is. You know, if it's relevant, I might leave it in. So, you know, that's kind of my workflow there. On YouTube and LinkedIn, you can actually go back in and update the live video, which is kind of cool. It's kind of limited, but there's some things you can do that I find add value. Both networks allow you to trim the videos. So for example, I always have a countdown clock, right? Because first of all, it takes me a minute to make sure we're live everywhere. And then second of all, it takes people a minute to show up, you know? So I don't just turn the camera on and go, okay, we're live, let's go. Is everybody here? No, because it takes a minute. And so I go back in and I cut out that timer, because why does anybody want to look at a 59 second timer, you know, after the fact? On YouTube, you can also add cards. So if you have an approved website to link to, you could have a call to action, you know, buy the book, buy whatever, you know, do, or whatever. You could link to your website. If you don't have an approved website because you're not in the YouTube, I think it's the partner program now, you can still link to your channel. You can link to playlists. You can link to other videos. So there's still other things you can add that add more value. And that's kind of cool. The one thing that's kind of annoying. So I just did a live stream this morning, a few hours ago, and I still can't edit the YouTube version because it takes forever to process. You can watch it publicly, but I can't edit it until probably tomorrow morning. But, you know, I just got to remember, I make myself a little Trello card or a checklist and, you know, update YouTube. So I'll remember.
That's really interesting and a great point, because I know that I've gone back and watched, not necessarily, it might've been on YouTube, but also Zoom things just later on. And they still have this really long intro, like minutes of waiting for people to join and such. And the fact that you're able to optimize that makes it so much better for users later on, much more likely that they will engage. So that's good to know that that's a possibility on YouTube. Mm-hmm. How does promotions work for this? I assume there's a lot of overlap with podcasting, where you're tapping into your normal audiences. In your case, like you said, you had built social channels over the years. If a company has an email list or what have you, and going on other people's live shows because you're appealing to those same audiences. Is this the case? And are there any other promo tips you have?
Yeah. So first of all, so Jason Falls, who I credit that I started this whole live streaming thing a little bit more seriously, him and I have slightly different philosophies on how to do the publishing. So here's what I do. I do a live stream, let's say today. And typically, if it wasn't April Fool's Day, I would publish the podcast version in like 4 weeks, you know? And the reason I do that is because I want to pull them apart from each other and not just like have to promote the same content just for different channels over and over. So, but when I go live, I schedule the live stream post like typically a few days out. And you can do that now on YouTube. You can do it on LinkedIn. You can't do it on Twitter. You can do it on Facebook. Facebook, I think you can be 7 days out, 6 days, you know, just shy of 7 days, I think. And what I found is when you do those posts, they have hundreds and hundreds of views and they don't even say much. So people at least can see it. So I always like to put a call to action in those as well. You know, something they can do if it's about the book, hey, buy the book here. Or if it's about whatever else, like a conference, you know, check out the conference here or whatever it might be. But I schedule them in Restream, and then, and Switcher has it too. I'm sure StreamYard has it. And basically that's my promotion. And what's nice about it is once the live stream goes live, it'll play in that post and it'll just bump to the top of your queue on LinkedIn, for example. So you don't have like 12 posts saying, join us today, join us tomorrow, join us in 2 days. Like nobody cares. Like some people might, but not in general, right? You have replay views, you have some live views, you have people tuning in the middle of it. So that really helps to kind of keep things together.
I didn't realize that. That's really interesting. I've been curious how that works. I want to pivot a little bit to talk about Clubhouse, Twitter Spaces, this whole new trend. LinkedIn's getting it now, of live audio. And I want to hear your take, first of all, just in general of these platforms, but also when you think it makes sense to for brands to dabble in kind of this space where it's not video, it's just audio, and it might take a little work to build momentum, but they are newer platforms. So some people argue that it makes sense to do that. What are your thoughts?
Well, it does kind of make sense depending on the brand as well. And as you can see on Clubhouse, you're not supposed to record things, but there are certainly people on there that record everything and then they publish it as a podcast. So they kind of seem to agree with what I'm talking about, except that's not the intent of that platform. So it's something to keep in mind. Now people are putting on their recording, you know, so you know that they're recording. I think they're worth dabbling with. And I also think they're always worth signing up for. And I'll give you an example. Amazon Live, you know, fairly recently opened up Amazon Live. Amazon.com opened up Amazon Live. And somebody said, how did you get in there so quickly? And I said, I don't know. I applied for the Amazon Influencer Program like 8 years ago. I don't know how long, a long time ago. And then I did nothing with it, but I was approved, right? And then that automatically had me in it right now. So my point is always sign up when you can, right away, even if you don't use it. Because now if I decide that I want to do Clubhouse more and I've tried it before, I can just integrate it right now because I already have it. Twitter Spaces, I have that too, you know? So I can do it. The biggest problem I find is we don't have enough time as it is, right? Nobody really does. So live streaming, the way we've been talking about it, it's very integrated. Like it takes me no more time to live stream my podcast. It's like saying, how much extra time does it take you to push your podcast to 20 podcast networks or 10? Doesn't take you any more time, same amount of time, right? But if you add Clubhouse or Twitter Spaces and you have to do original content just for those networks, that's now you're multiplying the time it takes you to do everything. So that's like the biggest thing I think you need to think about. How does it fit? Where does it fit? How much time do you want to, allocate to it? And then sometimes, you know, it's just like, I don't know, you're having a conversation. It's another Zoom meeting, you know?
Yeah. I've been dabbling in Clubhouse, and what I've noticed, and this might just be my experience, I would love to hear from you or anybody else who's listening who's been on Clubhouse to see if they agree, but it's tough to promote outside of Clubhouse and get people to a different platform. Like you're talking about streaming on LinkedIn, Amazon, YouTube, places where people are already. I think on Clubhouse, a lot of people are just promoting within Clubhouse. So they're just talking at a lot of events, or they were really early on and they formed this really massive club and now they're good to go. But it seems like, to your point, a lot of work if you're going to hone in on one of these, that you have to hustle to build an audience over there.
Right. And then a lot of times, is the audience even different? I mean, if it's the same audience, why did you have to spend all the time again building that audience? Do you know what I mean?
It's Yeah, that's a good point. If it's the same people who are listening to you elsewhere, what difference does it make? I think the cool thing about it now is that because there are no live events, like we're still recording this with no massive events going on, no conferences. It's like the organic way for people to chat. But I don't know. I'm curious to see if that lasts. If once people are able to network and meet in person again, if that live aspect of just audio will make a difference. I don't know. To start wrapping the show up, do you have examples of people or brands, aside from yourself, because I know that you have been kind of dominating at this, that are doing a really good job of live streaming as an example?
I mean, of course, Vox Pop Me is one, but I'm involved in that as well. If I'm just going to pull it up here quick, because I forgot to do that. But on LinkedIn, I get these notifications all the time of people going live. They must disappear for some reason. Hirewell is one that does it really well. It's like a recruiting firm, I think. And what they do is they literally just call it welcome to the weekly Hirewell update. We'll cover a few of the openings we have, some of the things we're working on. And literally it's like four people on screen and they really are just having a conversation. And that's one thing you might want to, think about. It's a conversation. It's not so formal. When you do it, StreamYard is live all the time. They might be live the most of all the different platforms. So I would definitely check them out. Of course, it makes sense for them, right? They're showing off their platform. AdAge is another one. I'm really just going through my LinkedIn feed. You know, I got notifications turned on for live streams. Mm-hmm. AdAge goes live. Creativity editors share their favorite brand ideas of the week. So again, it's a conversation, you know, it's a topic, but then they talk around it. Companies are rolling out updates, Freshworks. They were live a couple of days ago here and they talked about things. So there's plenty. Oh, Heather Osgood, podcast advertising guru. She shares great content on there. And then I was actually on the show. I can't exactly explain why it's called the Pirate Broadcast, honestly. But Russ Johns, his show, he goes live every day, first thing in the morning. And he does a really, really nice job. And then there was another one. Now you got me down a rabbit hole here.
That's great, though, because I think I'm the type of person who likes to see examples, right? Like get ideas from what other people are doing.
You wanted like one example. I give you like eight.
No, I love this.
Actually, you know, this picture is here, I do have it. This is Paul Brown, Baked Bean Media. And it's a really fun show and he's in London. So when I was on his show, he's standing outside and every time a police car came by, he would say, hold on a second, we gotta watch the police car fly by. The other thing, Dealcasters. So those guys do it mostly on Amazon and it's not a true infomercial, but you know, they're very focused on Amazon Live, but they interview people and then you can buy stuff. So definitely, I think they're kind of onto something there as well. And you know, there's certainly others as well.
That's really cool. I like how there's so many different formats and people are kind of innovating with it. So yeah, I recommend if anybody listening hasn't really watched too many of them, that's a good place to start just to get ideas of how to format your own show. Christoph, you've been on this show before. You know that part of our goal is to help people get buy-in for content. And you've mentioned that live streaming can help you achieve that. Can you talk about that?
Of course. So I think, you know, if you go to somebody and say, hey, let's do a podcast and you're going to get 12 downloads, nobody's going to be excited, right? And but if you can say, hey, let's do a live stream in a podcast and you can, you know, get, I don't know, 500 listens and views, I think most people will be okay with that, especially in B2B, you know, where the numbers are generally smaller. And the other thing is everybody is looking for efficiencies. And a lot of times what I've heard in the past, not necessarily right this second, but previously, how do we bring down the cost? How do we make things more efficient? And they always think it means paying writers less or finding cheaper writers or finding whatever. What it actually means, in my opinion, is it means that you find more efficient ways to do things. And you know, doing a live stream, interviewing the people gets everything out already, turn it into a podcast, turn it into a blog post, turn it into social updates. I don't know how you're going to be any more efficient than that. I mean, if I may say so myself, but that's, you know, it seems to be very efficient. And also time is money, right? So once you get the system down, it is a relatively quick process. And what's interesting is when you first start, could flip, but the thing, you know, the live stream might get you the best results and the blog post, which takes the longest, will get you the fewest results out of the gate. So it's kind of interesting to see. I still recommend you do all because the articles do have SEO value long-term, and especially in B2B, I mean, I've seen studies that it can take 2 years to rank for something, you know, I mean, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It speaks to your point of how everything is interconnected, but it does make sense that you're just adding this other layer of benefit when you're going live. It's not just we're recording a podcast now, it's, and we're going live and engaging an audience and happen to have a podcast coming out of that. It's just double for almost the same amount of work. Christoph, last year, I don't remember what month you were on the show, but I was asking a question of all of our guests at the end of the show. This year, the question is about creativity. And it's a little bit of a curveball from the topics that have been on the show this year, but I've essentially been asking everyone, how have you been able to stay creative, especially when we're all stuck at home and I'm in a rut, at least. I assume other people are too. And you can speak to this specifically for live streaming or just in general. How are you able to think outside the box and come up with creative ideas?
Well, first of all, I want to say it depends on your personality. I'm really fine just being at home. I think it's a tremendous waste of time and energy to drive anywhere anymore, honestly. And I get a lot of stuff done here, right? If I want to hop on my treadmill for a minute, I can do that. If I want to go sit on the couch for a meeting, I can do that. And, you know, it seems to work. But you do have to make a point to stay connected with people. And I think that's probably the hardest. I had a meeting the other day and I said, what are we meeting about? And he goes, nothing. I just wanted to say hello. I'm like, oh, but it's like a formal meeting. I'm like, yeah, just otherwise we wouldn't get it done. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Because you don't run across each other anymore, right? So you have to kind of make that point to figure out a way to communicate. And one thing that I love to do is I share crappy ideas all day long. And I did this earlier. And I said, here's crappy idea number 29 for the day. What if we do blah, blah, blah. And, you know, people were like, oh, that's a really good idea. And just by like sharing it, you know, and talking about it. And so the other thing is to, first of all, I don't think most of those ideas are crappy, right? Some of them are better than others and some are just kind of like, yeah, whatever. But just by saying, here's a crappy idea, you kind of take out the expectation that anybody, like if somebody says, ooh, I don't like it, I'm like, okay, I won't feel bad. I already called it crappy, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to find the different ways that make it work for you. I really honestly don't think not being in an office doesn't allow you to be creative. You still can. But I'm, believe it or not, Amanda, but I'm an introvert. So I don't know how that looks for an extrovert, right? Because like once everybody is gone for the day, like it's quiet here. You know, every once in a while a cat comes over and, you know, hisses at me for one reason or another. But other than that, it's like, it's pretty quiet. I like it. Like if I was an extrovert, I might not like it. So you kind of have to figure out what works for you and then also, you know, build on the things that you need to make it work.
That's interesting. The person who scheduled the meeting with you sounds like an extrovert. I'm an extrovert. But that makes a lot of sense. It's harder now to build those connections. And I'm glad that you mentioned the personality type thing because you're right. I don't think the answer is going to be the same for everyone listening. So do you find that just talking, like you kind of alluded to the fact that just talking to people helps you stay creative, just getting feedback, even if it's not the best idea you've ever had?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important that you talk to people and also find a way to communicate in the best possible way. For example, I do find Zoom meetings with video on, if you have them all day, I just find them draining. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you have to have video on when there's 96 people on the call, right? Like you can't see me. Even when there's 5 people on the call, like why do you have to look at me? And here's the thing, I know you guys can't see me, but my resting thinking face doesn't look all that engaged. Seriously. Do you know what I mean? Like whether you see me on camera, it's probably better that you don't see me on camera sometimes. So, you know, you got to figure out what works and what doesn't work, and then understand that different people have different needs. Now, I know some people will take advantage of it, but I had a meeting the other day, like a 90-minute meeting, which was a really good meeting, but I had no place to say anything in that meeting. Like, and I it wasn't about me, right? It was, I was listening to another department's stuff. There's no reason I got to be on camera, which I wasn't. And I hopped on my office treadmill for the whole meeting, right? Mm. And I was on mute. So that helped me, you know, stay sharp, pay attention. The other thing that it helped me when I'm walking and listening, I can't be on my phone, right? I can't be doing other things. So, but yeah, definitely figure out a way to talk to people. The other thing, which I haven't cracked exactly yet, you know, when we were in offices, you would always say good morning, mm-hmm. goodbye when you see people. I think goodbye, some people don't make, never made an effort, but that doesn't happen, right? Like nobody goes on Slack in the morning and just like goes, good morning in the round, like you would do if you walk into the office, mm-hmm. you know? So that's, I don't know what the way around that is, because if everybody were to do that, it's kind of weird too, but everybody did it in real life, you know?
Yeah, no, it's one of those tough transition things with working remotely, those touch points that people just don't have anymore. It's an interesting thought, but I like what you're saying just about not just connecting with people, but how you're connecting with people and taking in information can make a huge difference. Christoph, thank you so much for coming on the show again and sharing your insights about going live. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it and definitely enjoy your show. Listen every week.
Oh, that's awesome. And your book's on Amazon, or where's the best place for people to buy it?
Amazon is probably the best way. If you're in the US, if you go to authenticstorytelling.net, I'm happy to send you a signed copy. You can order it on there. And what's kind of exciting is it's available in Kindle, paperback, and now hardcover, which Ooh. Is first time in hardcover. And super excited that happened.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas on where I can take a day trip outside of DC, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. As I said to Christoph, I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for the logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.